You're listening to the Gold Squadron Podcast, your home for X-Wing discussion, strategy, and entertainment.
My name's Dion Morales, the host of the Gold Squadron Podcast, and you are listening to episode 22. We have the whole team here today. We have Gold Leader Ron Longhi.
Hello, everybody.
Targeting Coordinator Andrea Longhi.
What's up, guys?
The shortest Wookiee, Marcel Manzano.
I smell like a Wookiee.
And the historian and flavored judge, Alex Maring.
Hey, everybody.
So on today's show, we were going to continue our playbook section. We were going to continue our playbook segment. We do have a short one planned if we don't run out of time talking about what we really want to talk about. And that is the Mondo FAQ that was dropped today at around 3 o'clock. But before we get into that whole thing, let's do our Patreon shoutouts. So Kim Reynolds, Rob Almond, Robert Blackstock, Michael Prince, and Matt Foss, we want to thank you for your support.
Unlock the hologram.
So guys, we are going to talk about and discuss the FAQ here. I figured, you know, let's just start. There's really four major things that have been errated. Not even just FAQ. This is just a straight, like, yeah, we just changing this.
Yeah.
Let's start with X7. Because I think that's probably the least impactful one, maybe. Debatable. We can debate that. That's fine. I'll go ahead and read that. So the TIE X7 title now says, or now should say, after executing a 3, 4, or 5 speed maneuver, if you did not overlap an obstacle or a ship, you may perform a free evade action. Ron, go ahead and take this apart for me. What is different between that and what it used to be?
So the biggest difference here is they nerfed the ship in such a way, or the title card in such a way, so that you actually have to fly to take advantage of getting that token. Before, you could overlap an obstacle, you could bump into another ship, you could be stressed, and you're always going to get that evade token. There's nothing your opponent can do to alter that. Now, with this fix, because it's a free evade action, if you do not overlap or bump an obstacle or ship, there's basically three ways that opponents can now play around it. They can either stress you so that when you go to take that free evade action, you don't get the action because you're stressed, can't perform an action while stressed, or they could bump you, or they could force you to go over an obstacle. If any of those things happen, you just perform a 3 maneuver, you don't get the free evade, and you won't take your normal action. So your ship is then temporarily vulnerable due to either how you flew or how your opponent flew to block you or force you into a bad position, which I think everyone can agree, and this has kind of been my thing. I feel like every ability, when being designed, should have in mind playing within the rules of the game and rewarding you for flying. Like, every ability should be able to somehow come back to the basics of flying your ship, putting in a good position.
Alex, any thought on this?
Yeah, I totally agree with Ron said. There, half of this game should be learning and mastering how to fly. And I know a lot of people were thinking the title was just easy mode and here's your free token just for moving. And I think this is a good decision on FFG's part to still keep the title relevant. They're not completely putting defenders back where they were, but they're still competitive.
I love it. I think this is how it should have been in the first place. To Ron's point, it rewards you for flying. Right, I think that's one of the biggest complaints that so many people have had, including myself, is that when you added the X7 title, it didn't reward you for good flying. You can make mistakes and you still get all the benefits, especially when you have Juke connected with it. You get an evade, plus you get the Juke ability on top of that, even if you're stressed, even if you're on top of a debris or bump another ship. So I love it. And I think, to Alex's point, I think it was Alex who said, it doesn't kill the title or it doesn't kill the defenders. I don't think so. I think it just makes you fly smarter. I do think it makes Riad, a much more valuable pilot than the other ones, even more so than it was before, because it has so many different maneuvers that it can clear stress and so many different ways that it can still get that, especially with the Twin Ion title, not title, Twin Ion modification on it. So, yeah, I think this is a great change.
Yeah, I mean, concur across the board. I think it'll be really interesting to see the change in list building, if any, at the next big tournament, which is going to be the Hoth Open. Because obviously we all saw at Worlds that an iteration of Defenders and Palpatine, or just straight up Defenders, was very, very common. So it'll be... I'll be really interested to see how the actual percentages of the field change after all of these effects take place.
So one thing I'm kind of debating now in my head, does bringing the value down on X7 kind of put it more on the level with the TIE-D title, and now it's not like, oh hey, if you're going to run a defender, auto include X7. Can you now really make serious consideration, say, hey, TIE-D actually can be pretty valuable, or on at least on par with that X7, because now if I have my cannon and I get blocked, I still get to shoot with that tractor beam first. I won't have modifications, but you still... its TIE-D is not susceptible to blocking, at least not in the sense where you can still get to shoot. That's kind of one thought that's been going through my head. And the other question is, we saw a huge surge of defenders when that Imperial Veterans pack came out, and as soon as that came out, tons of people started running homing missile, right? You saw homing missile Bosks, homing missile Miranda walking around everywhere and just trying to blow up defenders. Do we now see this is a major change. I'm curious to know how that's going to change the tech that people are using. I'm looking at kind of some tournament results, and I am seeing even before this nerf, a decrease in homing missile already, so maybe that was already coming. But just a thought. Because auto evade is not a thing anymore, at least not for this. You have to, like you guys have all said, you have to actually fly the ship.
I was just gonna say, I think you're seeing a downtick in homing missile isn't really per se due to the defender. I think it's more of the fact that defenders aren't the dominant list in the meta. They're the best thing on the dark side, but not the dominant list in the meta anymore. The dominant list has been Paratani for the last couple of tournaments, so that's why you're not seeing as many homing missiles. As far as the title, I don't think you're going to see too many people taking the TIE-D over the TIE-X, because the TIE-D, you're still paying more points for a ship, whereas the TIE-X7, it's still a defender, and if you fly good, you're still getting that token. It just... leaves it so that there are more opportunity for skill to determine more of the dice outcomes in that game. That's all.
Yeah, I was going to say almost the same thing. I think homing missile is... you're starting to see a lot less homing missile, because the defenders aren't as popular as they used to be, to Ron's point. Also, I think part of it has to do with when Scavenger Crane came out. I've seen a lot more cluster missiles as a result of that. And I think part of that reason is because a cluster missile has more chance to deal more damage in one shot and kill something and get that cluster missile back, especially when you put it on Bossk. So I think that's part of the reason why. Because you've seen that boss cluster missile a lot more, and you see a lot less defenders in general, mostly because of Peritani and people have just learned how to fly against defenders better anyway. I don't think you'd seen a lot of defenders winning any major tournaments recently, even before the before this nerf. In the list that I was putting together for Hoth, where I had the three cracks. TIE fighters to Hull Runner with crack, and I had a homing missile on Tomax just in case I did run into a defender, and that's something that I got to look into. If I'm still going to fly that list, am I going to keep homing missile on it? I see the benefit of keeping homing missile because that's really one of the only missiles that you can keep your target lock and get the rerolls from the target lock, so it's still a really good missile. We're going to go through all of the changes, but when you go through all of the changes, I think one of the ships that becomes more popular again is the TIE Interceptor, because of the Zuck is one that we'll talk about a little bit later. The TIE Interceptor and Sinterfell becomes more of a thing again, I think, and the homing missile against the TIE Interceptor is still really good. So I don't know, we'll see. And it's hard to tell. Too early to tell, I think.
Yeah, I think I had the exact same thought about Sunterfell. Does he have more of a presence? Because the whole reason Sunterfell wasn't being played was only, not because he was bad, was because he just can't do enough damage to hit some of the Peritani lists or hit the defenders. Like, if you're doing 2 or 3 damage with Sunterfell with a focus token, you're going to do maybe 1 damage to a defender if you're lucky. I watch a lot of games where Sunterfell, I've even seen people drop the stealth device, run targeting computer on Sunterfell. They load everything up for a 4-dice maximum hit. They get the 4 dice, but the defender's like, well, I have a focus and I have an evade and I'm rolling 3 dice and I have palp. So it's like, all right, I'll take 1. And that was the best thing that Sunter could do, and all it did was take a shield. So I think if you're running a list and people start getting back to, like, maybe blocking or doing something, maybe. But I'm not sure how Sunter can... Well, we'll have to talk about what it's going to be with Peritani before we talk more about Sunter, I think.
Yep, and another thing here, we can kind of take a look at what are some of the popular lists that were using this X7 title defender, right? So we had a lot of Commonwealth defenders. One of the new flavors is taking the Swarm Leader Upsilon Shuttle with 2 PS1 X7s. Now, here's a question there. Does the value of the PS1 defender go up because now they have the advantage of being able to move first and being less likely to be blocked?
I think that's a reasonable question. Yeah, why not?
Yeah, I agree. I think a skilled player is now going to try and block those defenders to prevent them from being able to just get that free evade and make them much easier to take out. So I think there is going to be a little bit more inherent value to those lower PS ships that have the ability to move before your opponents have a chance to do anything.
I think it's a small effect, like when you're building a list, like you might even start now thinking about, instead of just loading a couple more upgrades on a guy, you might think, maybe I just want to get 12 points in my list and actually throw a TIE fighter in my list or a Z95 so that I have that fourth ship that can simply just be a blocker to block. Maybe you block Manaru, maybe you block a defender now because blocking is going to be more effective now that you can kind of stop some of these abilities that couldn't be stopped before.
Yeah, and I think the Dom's list from the Chicago Regional, and then somebody else took it at a system open and did well with Kylo Shuttle and the two defenders, the two PS1 defenders feeding at evade tokens. I think that still becomes really, you know, it was already starting to see some play there with that, with Swarm Leader on Kylo. I think because of the possibility of a bump and not getting your free evade, you can modify Dom's list to take one of the 28 point defenders out and replace it with something like an Omega Leader that just carries the evade token with him, and he'll shoot first, so by the time Kylo shoots, you'll know if he spent that evade token or not. So it opens up, I just like it all around. It opens up so many different options.
Agreed. And one of the strategies with that list was just to take a PS, one of your PS1 defenders, and just ram it into somebody and have it in arc. And because you did a 3, you had an evade. Now you can't do that anymore. You actually have to be a little bit smarter about it. But yeah, that's the X7 change. We know that the defender in the last few months here has really been meta warping, right? You could not build a list without having a plan for defenders. They're still good. They, especially if you fly them well, like we've been saying. But one of the biggest things now is that it's no longer easy mode. Nobody can take Commonwealth defenders and, you know, go ahead and beat somebody 100-0, which I've seen, you know, and that's been a very common, just kind of like easy beginner list. You're like, oh, here are defenders, just go 3, 4, or 5 and you'll survive for a long time. You take away a quote unquote beginner list, but at the same time, I think it's a beginner list that has bad habits, because you're not gonna now, right? It's been nerfed. Anybody who's just been playing all defenders, X7 defenders, they're going to be having a hard time, because what they were doing before no longer works as well. Let's move on to the next big one. I figure we stay on the Imperial side and we hit Palpatine. Andrea, since you were the first one in our playgroup to really just, you got, as soon as it was revealed, you're like, yeah, Palpatine is great, amazing. And everybody was like, nah, I don't know, it's overcosted, blah, blah, blah. I'm going to have you read off the errata, please.
Yeah, so this is what the card will now read. Obviously, still Imperial only. Once per round, before a friendly ship rolls dice, you may name a die result. After rolling, you must change one of your dice result to the named result. That die result cannot be modified again. Big change. So but I think it's fair.
Yeah, I'm going to let you go ahead first. You go ahead and rip into this.
Okay, so, I mean, obviously Palpatine has been relatively omnipresent at all competitive events and has always done well, which I think is why it's just signaled that it needed to be nerfed to a degree. This makes a big change, because you have to trigger Palpatine before you actually roll your dice. So now there's no more roll your dice, see what you get, see what your opponent rolls, and then decide whether or not you want to use stuff. Again, we're going back to being able to play the game the way it was almost originally intended, and taking away that die result component and bringing that back into the field of, okay, so you'll guarantee get whatever die result you want, but you can't abuse it and say, oh, I already rolled 3 hits, so I'm not going to trigger it. You have to have already said that before you're going to actually commit one way or the other. It's a big change in how you actually play him.
I think that this is probably going to be one of the more controversial decisions. I've already seen a lot of talk. People say that he's just completely unplayable, destroys the card. I don't know if I agree on that yet. No one's put it on the table to say, but here's my thought. Palpatine is still going to be decent. You still are guaranteeing one result of your choice before you roll any dice. So you're still getting an evade. You're still getting that crit. If you need to get that hit or a crit to turn down a crucial critical, you can still do that. There's still a lot of things that you can do with this. The difference is you can no longer use Palpatine to stack with all the defensive abilities in the game to guarantee that you are going to just not miss any rolls. And that was the problem that it had before. So, but I mean, for instance, if you're playing Commonwealth Defenders with Palpatine and you have an evade token and a focus token and you have Palpatine and you know your defender is, say, only got one or two health left, you could still guarantee get that evade from Palpatine, roll your dice, most likely get an evade from one of your dice because you have a focus, and then you have the evade token, you can defend 3 damage. Now you could just roll bad and roll all blanks and you're only defending 2 damage and you might still die. But I still think it's better than people think, and it's a tricky card to nerf, because what made him so good was being able to react to what your opponent was doing. Now you can't react as much. And if you nerf its range, it doesn't do anything. I do like that he is the only ship that has unlimited range, the only ability that has unlimited range. I think that's fine. I just rack my brain around this. How can you nerf him that seems somewhat fair? And this is the only fair one I can think of. But if you could think of something else, I'd be more than happy to hear what everyone else thinks.
I like this one, too. I don't disagree with it at all. I agree that people are going to just go crazy before they actually take a look at how good of a card it still is, even for 8 points. I mean, it's still an amazing ability. Most of the time that you're playing, you already know when you're going to use it. If you're using it for defensive, you know which is going to be the biggest, you know which one's going to be the most important shot that you're going to have to defend. Somebody at range 1, if you get Fen Rao against one of your defenders at range 1, you know that that's the shot that you have to evade. The only problem is, before, you didn't have to guess. You can just be, again, a little lazy and not be smart and take some of the tactics and strategy and thought process behind it and just say, well, I'm going to react. I'm going to see what happens first and then react. And that seems to be a common theme for this whole FAQ as we move on down. It takes some of the reactiveness out of it, and it makes you think ahead of time, what do I want to do? And it makes you fly better. I think it's still a very powerful card. If I play an Aces list, I'm still going to be thinking Palpatine to get me out of those. Either get me out of a bind where I know that somebody's going to be shooting me with more dice than I have, or if I need to get a damage in. A critical damage in, or just get as much damage as possible to take out a ship. I know when that's going to happen. Just lets me. It's like C-3PO. You know when you want to use it, but it's just more flexible.
I think that's a great point that you just made. That the trend seems to be moving back towards skill and taking away some of these abilities that have been quote-unquote easy mode or have the opportunity for you to react a lot more to what is actually happening after the fact, as opposed to having to really plan out your decisions. I think it'll make everybody better players.
I'm in full agreement there. One of the other things that I think this change does... you can, now that you're not reacting with Palpatine, which is the bad part, there is a guarantee that now that has been added into there, though, right? That dice cannot be modified after it's been rolled. So it is safe from So because it does happen beforehand, it cannot be, for instance, Zuckist. It can still be crackshotted, because that happens at the compare results step. But anything that would happen during the modified dice results step, it is immune from that. So it can't be juked or anything like that.
R7 Astromech, you can't make them re-roll it.
Exactly. None of that. It is whatever it is that you put on there, it stays. Now, in the event that, let's say, you decide to use it on offense and you really need a crit because you're using, you know, Kylo, I'll show you the dark side condition or something. You could set it to a crit, right? I want a crit. Or you don't set it to a crit. You declare crit. And let's say you roll it and you have two hits and a crit. You could either take a hit and just change it to a crit, or you can reinforce that crit and say, all right, this crit now is unchangeable. You know, something like that, just to give it more protection. It does give you some different options there. And like I said, though they did take away the reactionary ability, they do put in a little bit of an insurance there for anybody who does play Palpatine. Trying to think if there's anything else I wanted to bring up about him.
I think it's a great point. Like, I really don't think anyone actually... I haven't even heard anyone mention that yet, and I haven't thought about it myself, that you are putting this ability out there and your opponent can't mess with it. It is a guaranteed die result.
One thing I wanted to say about it is a lot of people are going, oh, it's totally overcosted for its price now, and it's totally not worth playing. But if you actually break down the math, if you used him purely for defense, if he saves you 2 or 3 points of damage, it being hull or shields being worth 4 points, hull being worth 3 points, he's paid for himself. Mm-hmm. And anything past that is gravy.
Yeah.
So he's...
Yeah, I mean, getting that guaranteed die result is still 100% worth that point cost, in my opinion.
And his value is still going to be like tied to the same condition of how long can he be in the game to affect the game. And because his range isn't limited, you can still keep him on the outskirts, and you can still affect the game, because the more die rolls he affects, the more damage he's doing, the more he's paying for himself.
Do you think this change will encourage Imperial players who roll out Palpatine to use him more on offense?
I do.
Because I know the standard use was use it for defense unless my shuttle is the last thing shooting and Palpatine hasn't been needed. Okay, now I'll use it for offense. But I'm thinking now maybe because you have a choice now. All right, do I really need it for defense or offense? You know, hey, I can afford, you know, maybe I have focus evade on my ship, on both of my ships. Let me just use it for offense and really guarantee some damage here.
Yeah, I think if there's going to be a close situation, right, where you're like, man, I think you're going to run into interesting situations where, like, if you think you can kill a ship by getting, like, you're going to see people like, oh, I'm going to Palpatine, get a crit, hope for a direct hit to kill a ship, rather than rely on maybe the evade from that ship killing you. I think you'll see some of that.
I think also there might be some list building adjustments around how people want to play this, whether or not they want to play it more offensively or they want to stay a little bit more defensive. Because like we've said, you're going to have to make that commitment and that decision up front. It's going to, whatever your list really wants to do. Because, I mean, the reality is if you're running a Soontar Fell type build, depending on how you've loaded him out, you might want him to be the more defensive thing that just floats around, or you might want him to be able to actually punch through damage, which he normally doesn't do. It just kind of depends, and it might depend on your matchup as well, how you actually want to approach that matchup and use his ability.
Any other closing thoughts on Mr. Palpatine?
He's still good.
I think so too.
I think he's still good. I think you're still going to see him in competitive tournaments. So I don't think
he's going to be as omnipresent as he's been, which I think is a good thing. He's been at the top for a long time, and it, I mean, as much as I love him and as much as I played a Palpaces iteration forever, I think it's time for something new to come to the surface.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what other Imperial builds maybe can rise up, because Imperial builds have really been kind of choked. You're either running a Defenders or you're running Palpatine with an Ace. Mm-hmm. Or Palpatine with a Defender. So.
Yeah, no longer when somebody says, hey, I want to run Umpire, do you go, well, here's your Lambda shuttle with Palpatine, and what else do you want to do? That's not your default.
Did it say anymore. At Worlds, right, the Lambda shuttle was the most popular ship used at Worlds?
Yep.
So, kind of funny.
So, let's look at our next one. We're switching over to Scum now. Zuckuss. Marcel, you want to read me the Zuckuss change?
Scum only. When attacking, if you are not stressed, you may receive any number of stress tokens to choose an equal number of defense dice. The defender must reroll those dice.
Take it away.
Take it away. Yeah, that's what we're doing. We're taking it away.
Yeah, basically. Yeah.
Yeah, back to the same theme of fly better. Make smarter decisions. Make actual decisions. So now if you're stressed, you can't use Zuckuss. So you're going to do one of several things. You're either going to just Zuckuss one die at a time, so you can clear that stress on the next one, which limits your movement. Or you're going to Zuckuss maybe more than that, but then you're not going to be able to Zuckuss again for a while. Dion, I know you're made comments and before and right in front of us right here talking about inspiring recruit, that might become a more important card to add when you're playing Zuckuss. Now, personally, I think this is a move in the right direction. I don't think it kills Zuckuss by any means. I'm personally going to still fly Zuckuss quite a bit, because what's going to happen is instead of just Zuckussing any time that you shoot, you're going to, you know, it's going to give me the ability to know what ship. So, for example, Fenrau. If Fenrau is about to, actually, if Fenrau is just on the table at all, or a Sunterfell is on the table, that I don't care if I'm stressed out for the next three turns. I'm going to Zuckuss every single evade turn every single evade dice that they did, because it's so hard to push damage through on some of those ships that any chance you get, you take it. And it's only a 1 point. It's like a 1 point security blanket, you could say. You need to get damage through. You got that 1 point invested into guaranteeing that you're going to get that damage through that one time. I think it's very similar to Boba Fett, which is, in my opinion, one of the most powerful upgrades out there. I use Boba Fett at the North American, at Gen Con, and I use Boba Fett again at Worlds. It's 1 point. It's one-time use, but it's super powerful. It comes in at the exact moment when you need it, and that's an amazing card. Same thing with Zuckuss. It's 1 point. There's a possibility that it's only a one-time use, but it's going to come in exactly when you need it. And this one is a little bit reaction-based, because you get to see everything that's on the table, and then you get to make your choice. How many do you want to Zuckuss? So, again, I think it puts this back into a mode where you can't abuse it. But it doesn't kill the card whatsoever. It's Zuckuss is still a super powerful card that is worth putting in if you have an extra point to give.
Yeah, I totally agree here. Zuckuss is still great, and I think what happens now with the errata, what has happened, is that it is more in line with its cost. Being at only 1 point and being able to be used over and over and over again, I honestly think that card should have been at the Palpatine level, like something like 8 points. If you had you were running a party bus and just being able to just reroll anybody's defense dice whenever you could, and just affecting, kind of like how Ron was talking about Palpatine, the more die rolls that it could affect, the more value it had. But this Zuckuss card was only at 1 point. So all of us knew it was good, so we abused it, right? And we knew that it was great. And now I think it's more in line, and I totally agree with you, Marcel. Now the decision making comes into it where if I'm going to do three or four dice, I know it's probably going to be one time, but I have to make it count. I have to make sure I'm in good position, and if I have an inspiring recruit, maybe have a lane to be able to clear those stress. Or also, we might see some ships with better dials using Zuckuss. Maybe we'll see some Zuckuss now on something like a Shadowcaster that doesn't have push the limit, but will only be Zuckussing one die at a time because it can really easily relieve that stress. That's just an idea. But yeah, I'm okay with what has happened to Zuckuss, because I know definitely seeing 20 stress tokens on the table definitely makes you think and say the stress mechanic is broken, in the sense that it doesn't work. And now we're not going to see that per se with Zuckuss. And Marcel had this thought. I think what they did, man, they just took your North American Championship list and said, hey, let's make this not playable anymore, right? Because they took away Deadeye and Zuckuss from you.
Yeah. Well, you still got Boba Fett. I liked what Dion said there as far as putting Zuckuss on ships with a better dial. As you were saying that, I was thinking, like, Zuckuss now fits perfectly on a Shadowcaster. Fits perfectly on Ketsu in that Ketsu boss list, because with Ketsu, you want to guarantee that you get that shot in so you can take their agility down by 2 points. So boss can put in the finishing touch. Zuckuss being able to do that and trying to guarantee that damage in is good, because you can clear that stress so easily now. So I think there's a lot of options, and I still think it's very valid on a party bus as well. It's not as bad, you're guaranteeing one reroll. That's almost like a juke, almost. Not as good as a juke, but it's almost like a juke. So it's definitely not you're going to see a lot of Zuckuss around, I think.
Yeah. One thing I think that people aren't taking into consideration when they talk about the nerf of Zuckuss is when Zuckuss came out, I immediately thought the card was insanely good for 1 point, but I also felt like the card was necessary because we had Palpatine with, you got these defenders and, getting damage through on anybody with auto thrusters, evade tokens, Palpatine was just crazy, and even, Ventress, attacking Ventress now with Lots Razi and a focus and an evade. Like, just pushing through damage was so hard, and Zuckuss was kind of keeping those things in check. So if you're going to take those things down a little bit, you're going to nerf all those things that are really good, then Zuckuss had to get nerfed, or he'd be OP at 1 point. Now, he's still very good. He won't seem as bad as people think, because, again, it won't be as hard to hit some of these other things. And now it's like Palpatine is, you have to think about when you're going to use it and how much you want to use it. If you blow it all in one turn, make some re-roll three dice, and you can't use it for three turns, and then you can't finish off his ship because you couldn't make him re-roll a die, and you have to fly whites and greens to remove your stress, you're also putting stress on you so that Lots Rossi could take it off and still evade. I mean, there's lots of things that I think make this a more balanced change. And I'm all for the Zuckuss change, even though it's kind of nerfs my Gold Squadron special. Just going to say it.
Moment of silence.
It's very sad.
Well, to be fair, your Gold Squadron special was special before Zuckuss was even around.
That's true. But when Zuckuss came out, it was like, He was the ultimate, like, answer to those defenders and all that stuff. Although Tactician won't be so bad against defenders, now you can stress them and they won't get a free evade.
There you go. We'll go back to Boss, Gunner, Tactician. Alex, any thoughts on the Zuckuss?
I think it's fair. I admittedly don't play Scum that much. I'm really hardcore Imperial, as most of you guys know. The couple times I did play it, I kind of thought, like, wow, I can just keep doing this forever on a slaver and just never care. So I think it's one of those things that just makes things more fair. And I don't think it's nerfed to the ground or anything like that, but I think it's, you know, fair.
One thing, I just had this thought. One thing you can't do now, though, is you cannot do a stop maneuver and then Zuckuss somebody. You cannot inertial dampeners and Zuckuss somebody, which was a wicked move, right? Somebody tries to go forward really fast and try to block you, and you go, oh, I'm going to stop, hit you in range one, Zuckuss your dice. That is no longer a valid tactic. It's gone.
Yeah, I mean, again, you know, ships should be easier to hit with the TIE-X7 getting nerfed, Palpatine getting nerfed. So you shouldn't have to... Zuckuss doesn't need to be there as a check against the other ships, because that's what it was.
No, okay, guys. So I'm
now
sad.
Now comes the time where Dione cries as Mandeers.
Oh, God. Manaru.
She's not dead. She's just...
She's not different. Dead, but...
She just had some surgery. She's fine.
If you want to talk about no more easy mode, here you go. Here's your opportunity.
That's true.
Alrighty. I'll do this one for my boo. all right. So Manaru now should read: at the start of the combat phase, you may assign all focus, evade, and target lock tokens assigned to you to another friendly ship at range one. Oh, range one. Okay. So definitely an aggressive errata. But at the same time, arguably a necessary one. Can you guys tell I'm on the fence? so I'm gonna vent first, right? And give my thoughts. I'm gonna try to be objective, to the best of my ability. So what does this do? First, the traditional Dengaru list is dead. You can no longer play Lone Wolf, Dengar with Manaru. Doesn't work anymore. So if you want to play them two together, you have to have another solution there. Now Paratani, this is probably the biggest list currently. Actually, let me back up. The other list that it also has a big issue, effect on, is the old Fenaru, right? Your old Tarok Fenrau with Manaru. Very rarely when I saw people fly that list was Manaru that close in range one of those ships. She would be at range two and three, but range one, I mean, it's definitely going to change the flying style, and with those little AC ships wanting to really kind of boom and zoom and have space to barrel roll and boost, I don't know how playable that list is anymore. Now, Paratani, I kind of have this theory in my head here. I wouldn't be surprised if the original nerf for Manaru was less than range 1, maybe range 2, maybe even range 3. But with these tournament results over the last few weeks and seeing, you know, 6 out of the top 8 being Paratani, 5 out of the top 8 being Paratani, the first 4 opens were all won by Paratani. I would not be surprised if the developer said, you know what, that's range 1 now. We have to rein that in. Would not be surprised about that.
Not what to mention the Chicago Regional being Manaru.
Yeah.
I mean,
it was basically a Paratani variant.
Yeah. I mean... Now let's talk about how what's going to happen to Paratani. It's still a good list. I did do a little bit of practice beforehand, and I sent everybody on the cast a picture of me practicing and missing range one to Fenrao by a hair. But it's going to take a challenge to actually use this ship in this list. You're going to have to, we talked about last week, right, the different type of Manaroos. Your Manaroo has to be down and dirty now. And if you're not going to fly Manaroo into the fight, you have to really have a discussion with yourself and decide whether or not paying the extra points for Manaroo is worth it. Because can you get that same value out of any other ship that can take a Tani Mind Link but can also do something else that has not been restricted to a range one ability?
Something like a Scout with Mind Link and Intelligence Agent.
Yeah.
Now you've got a blocker who is getting you the focus for the rest of your crew, and then or maybe not, but still denying your opponent actions.
Yep. One thing I had been messing around with and really thinking to try to get an initiative bid was taking out Manaroo beforehand. But I mean, she was too good before, so I ended up not trying it. But now I'm going to kind of go back to some of those notes I was taking and seeing, hey, you know, Fenrao and Asajj are still two really, really solid pieces, even if you just leave them the way that they're built right now. That third ship there, you have 28 points to play with if you leave them as is. So we'll kind of see there what happens. I know I did get a text from one of our listeners, and they were asking about, do you think Fenrao is just better with Push the Limit now? I don't think so. I still think Atani Mind Link is better because you're still getting two actions. I don't know. Can you guys tell I'm torn here?
Nah.
So what, you know, you talked about the Manaroo, you know, we're talking about the Manaroo nerf, and in my opinion, I think this does make, and this is just my personal opinion, I think it does make Manaroo unplayable, because you've got two more points, and you have to keep them at range one. It just completely eliminates the whole point of Manaroo. For 2 points, you're just better off getting with the Scout, because you're not losing anything. In reality, you're really not losing anything as far as action economy, unless you're planning to fly him in formation, which I don't see it that, you know, I don't see Manaroo being as a formation flyer. But we talked about the Zuckus nerf, we talked about Manaroo, and we haven't talked about Denguru. So basically, Denguru does not exist anymore. Denguru is the reigning world champion list has both of its ships completely nerfed with both the Zuckus and Manaroo. So I think that's important to note. That list is completely gone. And the other point that I was going to make is the triple scout list that the only things that scared me when I was flying those triple scouts was to fly against Paratani or any type of Manaroo Atani list, or to fly against defenders. That doesn't exist anymore, because you can block a defender so easily now and get them off the board without that evade and focus. And you can, I mean, there is no more Paratani, not in the sense that it used to be. So I think I'm not going to fly that at Hoth, but I think that becomes a tier one list again, in my opinion, if you fly it well.
Okay. So I don't play Manaroo, so I think I have a pretty
unbiased
version of her.
Baby!
I feel like Manaroo is kind of the victim of a combo within the game. Like, I don't think that she probably needed to be nerfed range 1 to 2. But if you don't nerf
range
Manaroo...
Range 1!
That's what I'm saying. I feel like the range 1 nerf was only because of her ability to combo with Atani Mind Link. And there isn't – I was thinking about this after we played our game on Sunday. How do you nerf Atani Mind Link? How do you nerf that particular card? Because Atani Mind Link on itself is okay, right? Like, everyone gets an action. It's okay. It's really, really good. But it's not, like, busted. But when you combine it with Manaroo so that you not only give everyone an action, but then you give somebody else two actions – and she still gets her own action, it becomes really abusive. And I felt like they definitely nerfed Manaroo because Paratani, because Mind Link. And it wasn't just Paratani, right? Ultrock, Fenrao, like Atani Mind Link variants. The common thing in all those lists that were doing well was Manaroo and Atani Mind Link. That was the common thing, the common thread. And I don't know how you nerf either one. Either one you nerf, it's gonna wreck some of the lists. So they guess they nerfed the one that required you to have range. And it definitely it hurts a lot of lists. I was thinking about how do you nerf Mind Link? Because as you saw in our game when we played, Mind Link isn't really affected a whole lot by stress. It isn't affected a whole lot by Hot Shot Co-Pilot if you have Manaroo, because you just pass the second token to whatever guy's going to get shot. So, I don't know. It's a really tough thing. I definitely think that if maybe they could have... I don't know. What do you think about this for a fix of Manaroo? What if they left the range alone, but they just dropped the EPT for Manaroo, so she couldn't use Mind Link. Would that be terrible? She could do her limited range, she could pass tokens, but she couldn't use Atani Mind Link.
Well, that just makes Dengaroo still a thing.
Yeah, and here's a question for your question. So if you're going to start messing with ship stats like that, that just opens a whole other door for
that's messing with other never, ships. Yeah, they've never That'd messed the first with time. Anything on a ship other than the wording of the pilot.
Because you know what would happen is if they did that and they took EPT from Manaroo, everybody would freak out and say, why didn't you just take the EPT from the scouts?
From the contractor scout, exactly. That's why they didn't do it, obviously. But yeah. I was just trying to come up with another. And then I think everyone should freak out. And they should give EBTs to all the Y-Wings.
Amen. Amen. Especially if you watch the last episode of Star Wars Rebels.
Right,
Nicholas.
Right. So good.
I plan on taking plenty of sound bites from that episode. Anyway.
Dutch Vander. So that's my thought on it. I think it's a necessary evil until maybe if they revisit nerfing Mind Link, if Mind Link is still a really powerful thing and it's still doing way too much for such a little cost. Because that's kind of the problem with Mind Link. It only costs 1 point. Maybe they could revisit and they could extend the range on Manaroo to maybe 1 to 2 or 1 to 3 or something. Thing is, 1 to 3 does nothing. It all the lists are still viable. All the stuff does stuff. 1 to 2 hurts Dengaroo, but Paratani's probably still really good.
I think 1 to 2 is the sweet spot, but yeah.
So I want to talk about some tactics that a Paratani player can no longer use. Because this is one thing that immediately I was like, okay, I can no longer do X, Y, and Z. So one of the things I would commonly do with my Manaroo is put her in a spot for a block, take a target lock, and then after she's going to be safe, passing that target lock to probably Fenrao, who's far away outside of the fight, or Asajj, who's maybe disengaged at the time, and then just make sure I get them both target locks. And then the next turn, be able to maybe sloop out and then get a target lock with Manaroo, focusing, maybe not passing then, and then all my ships have target lock focus for a turn. That's not a thing anymore, unless you get them into range one. But the whole point was to be able to get somebody a target lock before they were in the fight. I think that those target lock shenanigans. And then one common thing is people would usually not target lock Manaroo for instance, for like a torpedo or trying to get a focus fired attack on her, because they're like, oh, they'll just pass it to the ship that's farthest away. Now, you target Lock Manaru for a plasma torpedo. All she's doing, if she passes it, is passing it to the person next to them, who probably can also get shot by that same torpedo.
Oh, I want to play scouts again, but I won't.
Yeah. I mean, and again, that's one of the things that they nerf, right? Like, if you look at this whole thing, they've kind of nerfed either like how you move or ranges. So, yeah, I mean, she was kind of playing without those rules this whole time.
Well, I think another overarching theme of all of these changes that they're making is they're taking some of these super combo out elements out of the game. Yeah. Like, you still have combos and you can still do gimmicky cool things, but it's not as excessive as it was, that basically prevents people from almost being able to play regular X-Wing, so to speak. Because if you can't compete with these combo-y crazy things that people are doing and taking four actions and doing all this stuff, a ship that can just move and take its one of two actions cannot compete. But if we're starting to move backwards a little bit and take some of these super combo-y elements out, I think that opens up the field of shipbuilding and kind of brings us back a little bit into being able to use other things that weren't usable.
Let's make some bold predictions. How many Paratanis, the current build, do you think will make the top eight at the Hoth Open?
Zero.
I was about to say the same thing.
I'll disagree. I'll say one.
Yeah, I would think one or two.
I think one.
Because I think if they... It depends on who's flying them, obviously. But I feel like, you know, when this was first released and Ron and I were talking about it, I feel like if you have the practice with flying Manaru like you do Dione and actually getting her involved in the fight where she's usually doing the one that's blocking and getting in everybody's face, your play style is not going to change that much. You're just going to have to be more aware of your decisions, and some of your things you're not going to be able to do as effectively.
Why are you giving me
hope? But I don't think it makes it a weak list by any stretch of the means.
Why are you giving me hope? Stop doing that. I don't
I'm just being honest.
Honestly, the other thing is going to be, too, this is what's going to matter about Hoth, is anyone who currently flies Paratani, who's really good, going to just jump off the bandwagon because they read the nerf and they're like, I'm just going to fly something else? Or is someone actually going to try to see if it even works? You've only got, when is it?
15
days? Yeah. 15 days until the tournament? So you actually don't have a lot of choice. So I think you're going to still see some people, like, I've been flying it the whole time. I will just bring Manaru into the mix and still do my thing. And if it's a good player, I think it still could be a pretty viable list. There isn't a lot of time for experimentation, but we'll see. You definitely won't see. I will say you'll see no Old Tarak Fenarau, no Dengaru. They're both completely out, in my opinion. But straight up Paratani, I don't know. I guess we'll find out. I mean, when you played me, the one time you passed the target lock and focus with Manaru to Fen, it was at range one, and it nearly wrecked me.
One point that I'll tack into this, you know, on top of what Ron was just saying, is that I feel like the people that have been playing a Paratani list with Manaru, that have been consistently playing it, have learned to incorporate Manaru into their plans a little bit more, into their playbook strategies, and they're actually getting her involved rather than having her skirt the edges. I think she was too valuable of a ship to skirt those edges and to not be involved in the engagements. So if the really skilled players were starting to shift in that direction anyway, I think this only just lends itself to to going that extra step farther and just being more aware of keeping your other ships within range one of her. I don't think it's going to be... I think you're going to see less of it because it's not as much quote-unquote easy mode as we've been saying. There's a lot more skill involved with flying it successfully, but I still think the really good players that have been flying this type of this archetype for a while, I don't think they're going to shy away from it.
Yeah, so I'll tell you why I said zero, that I think zero...
zero will make the cut.
Yeah, thank you. It's because what Dion said earlier, that what's going to end up happening is that there's just so many other options that you can do now. And the scout is just much... It saves you 2 points. And if doesn't make you predictable to have to fly in a specific way, it gives you a lot more options of what else you can do. And then it also gives you options for crew or something else. So I still think that the Paratani list, the combination of Asajj and Fenrau and plus one, is still it's still valid. It's still super strong. I mean, Fenrau with free focus from somebody and then the ability to do something else for just 1 point versus a push the limit is super strong. And Asajj with a free focus, one free action, and Lats Razi, it's still super strong. It's just you're going to have a lot more flexibility with that plus one, and I think people are just going to get creative, either putting in a scout with different crew, or before the podcast started for the listeners, Dion sent us all a message of him crying and saying, "Please help me, my Manaroo is dead." And I went to my phone, to my trusty Star Tactics list, and I started playing around. And for example, I found I came up with using what is it? Keto? Is that his name? Keto? The Z95.
Kato Lichos?
Yeah, thank you. So Kato Lichos with a tiny mind link, which lets him steal basically does a reverse Manaroo. So he can take target lock as his action and then have 2 focuses with guidance chip, cluster missiles, scavenger crane. And that happens right. And that still frees you up with enough points to buff out Asajj a little bit more with the title to get the tractor beam in. Give him the gyroscopic and also give her something like black market slicers and something else. And that's just an example of some of the weird lists that you can build. So you still have the same Fenrau. You have you have Asajj with now, she also has a title, tractor beaming. She has gyroscopic. She has 1 point for some type of something else, or just keep it for initiative. And then the Kato can target lock, end up with 2 focuses for both attacks on the clusters. Again, something that probably will be tractored already with guidance chips, with scavenger crane to get it back, to get kind of like a mini boss action thing going. So there's possibilities, and people will get creative. I was also playing around with, instead of Kato, looking at some of the quad jumpers. And it just frees you up to do so much more. So,
yeah, I think after, especially once we get past Hoth and get into Worlds prep, there's going to be a lot less of the traditional Paratani falling off. But I think we're so close at this point. I don't know that people are going to feel comfortable making a drastic change to their list without the ability to log the hours of practice. I could be wrong. But with it being 3 weeks from today, effectively, that's a really short time to have to rework the crux of how your list wants to fly.
So one of the things that... So if you're going to fly Paratani as is, another thought here is... Traditionally, when I fly them, Asajj and Manaroo usually stay together. So I think I can keep Manaroo pretty close to Asajj most of the time. I think the biggest thing that's going to change is how I fly Fenrau. because I'm not going to be able to guarantee that past extra action. I'll get the Itani Mind Link, but I think what it's going to lend itself to is you're going to have to be a little more cagey with your Fenrao. And on top of that, when it's time for him to strike, you're going to have to be really aggressive. There's going to be a lot of five forwards and or four forwards, and trying to land in that range one without having to boost. That way you can either focus again so that you have one for defense, which is really important, or if you're going to be really aggressive and maybe somebody's on their last leg, target lock. But I'm just kind of head simming, and I think that really to make Fenrao worth, you know, for him to be the hammer that he is in the list, is to be able to get his shot off at least twice, preferably three times. And if you're not taking that focus action for defense, he might just evaporate in that very first engagement, especially if you use a target lock focus for your first for your shot. Then you're left there. Yes, you'll have the title maybe and your fourth dice, but completely unmodified. So I think you are going to have to fly Fenrao significantly more aggressive. Okay, I'll stop whining now.
Hey, you've had a good run. That's the other thing you got to remember, right? Well, maybe other ships get to be played now.
Yeah, this is true.
I mean,
I played Manaru since like she came out.
I know. You've literally played not to criticize Trish, but you've literally played nothing else.
This is very true. This is my
Maybe this is your time to use the other ships in your collection.
They look really pretty on my shelf, though. Anyway, let's try to cover a couple other things here. We have a few minutes left before people have to go to bed, and try to cover some of the other more affected things that have been FAQ'd here. So a couple of clarifications here. I'll show you the dark side. Pretty much works exactly how we thought it did. If you suffer a crit, you get that. I'll show you the dark side card that you pulled out through the shields. Darth Vader for sure does not trigger. I'll show you the dark side. And if there are no pilot cards in the damage deck anymore, no card ends up being assigned, so I'll show you the dark side. Merrick Steel does not allow you. So one, I actually had a podcast listener email us and said, hey, somebody convinced the RTO that if they had Merrick Steel and they hit me with a crit, that they could choose like two extra cards off the damage deck and look at those and see if it was better than the I'll show you the dark side selected one. And it was like, no, it's just clear now. If you get a crit with Merrick and only one crit, it's I'll show you the dark side first, whatever's on there. And if you get another crit, then you get to do his ability. What other big ones you guys see there?
Immediately, officially means nothing, which it kind of always did.
Yeah. Adaptive Ailerons has been confirmed that if you go over an obstacle or bump somebody, you can still do your action afterwards, as long as, of course, your maneuver template doesn't hit the obstacle again, right? When you do execute your actual maneuver. So that's been for sure. You know what? There is something in here that is really good against Itani Mind Link players. There is a section. Let me just try to see if I can find it here. Here we go. Resolving simultaneous effects. Okay. So it reads here. If an effect simultaneously resolves against multiple ships, the player controlling the effect chooses the order in which the ships are affected. If a player has simultaneous effects that resolve from the same trigger, that player resolves the entirety of one effect before resolving the others. Now, here is a perfect example. Versus an Itani Mind Link squad, if you have a thermal detonator go off and you have two ships at range one of that detonator, those stress tokens are assigned separately. So you would choose, let's say you have Asajj and Manaru, range 1 next to this thermal detonator. You assign one of those stress tokens first. Receiving that stress token, let's say on Asajj, triggers a Tani Mind Link. All of them now have stress. Then, no. Yes.
No.
Yes.
Because, no, because it says you resolve the entirety of that ability first. So you resolve the entirety of the bombs first. You resolve all the bombs first.
I totally disagree with you.
Read what it says out loud one more time. The actual ability. The fact.
But they choose the order in which the ships are affected.
Right, but it also said you resolve the whole thing first.
You resolve the entirety of an effect. So if an effect would trigger something else happening, you finish resolving that entire effect and any subsequent effects before you continue to resolve the rest of the bombs.
You would continue resolving all of the stress from the bombs first, because that's one effect.
No.
And then you would trigger a Tani Mind Link.
No.
Disagree, my friend.
I have to read it, because the way you're saying it, I disagree.
So it does have an example.
I was going to say, they gave an example that...
So it says in here, if an effect simultaneously resolves against multiple ships, the player controlling the effect chooses the order in which the ships are affected. For example, the effects of assault missiles and chopper ship are resolved in the order of the controlling player against multiple targets. If a player has simultaneous effects that resolve from the same trigger, that player resolves the entirety of one effect and any subsequent effects from that trigger before resolving the others. For example, if a ship overlaps multiple cluster mines at the same time, the controlling player resolves one of the cluster mines, rolling for damage and removing it before resolving any remaining effects, even if the ship is already destroyed.
They had on the actual web page,
chopper one.
Yeah, I'm trying to go and pull that up because was a lot clearer.
I don't understand the point of saying resolve the entirety of that effect before any other effect. Because if you put that clause in there,
because it's saying resolve the entirety of the effect and any subsequent effects. So. I'm just going to...
So you're not resolving... So you resolve one stress, then you don't continue resolving the bomb, you resolve the Atani Mind Link.
Correct.
And then
the second stress. So one of your ships, if you have two of them in range one, we would end up double stressed.
Yeah. So on the actual website that had the article about the FAQ, they gave this example. So... For instance, Chopper, the ship pilot card, reads, at the start of the combat phase, each enemy ship you are touching receives one stress token. When this effect occurs, if Chopper is touching multiple ships, the player with Chopper decides the order in which the ships will receive the stress token. If a player has an effect that would trigger additional effects, the player resolves the entirety of one instance of the original effect and any subsequent events that trigger from that instance before resolving the other instances of the original effect. Therefore, if Chopper was touching Soontir and Vader, the player who controls Chopper would choose an order for them to receive the stress. Soontir fell, then Vader, for instance. In the example, Soontir fell would receive a stress token, and Soontir fell's ability, when you receive a stress token, you assign a focus to your ship, would trigger, giving Soontir fell's player a chance to assign one focus token to Soontir fell. Once that occurred, then Vader would receive the stress token.
Okay, so they are their wording's a little weird. You're not resolving the entirety of the effect. You're resolving the effect on one target first, then any triggers, then going to a second target, then any triggers.
Right,
that's why they say the entirety of an effect.
That article is definitely worded different than the FAQ.
We need a FAQ for our FAQ.
Yeah, because it definitely says resolve the entirety of effect. I'm reading it. So
it says one effect, though, and any subsequent events that trigger from
the
that
word
effect.
Entirety would mean you resolve the whole thing. That would if the entirety of that effect. So that's where I would believe it's just a contradiction in words on how they're doing it. So But it's fine. The article definitely clears it up. You resolve the effect against one ship first. Any triggers, then the next ship.
So if it does work that way, which maybe I think so.
I think you're right. That article clears it up clearly.
I think the thermal detonator, the value on that bomb has gone up.
For sure.
If a tiny mind link continues to stay a thing, I think the value on that has gone up. And we actually had that question yesterday, and we ruled it not this way we're talking about. We ruled it as if it just kind of happens and everybody just gets stressed, one stress, and then that's it.
So then how does Sabine work then? With bombs now. Because before, what Sabine used to work is like you drop the cluster missiles, the cluster bombs, they run over all three. They make the rolls for all three, and then you could choose which one to trigger Sabine.
That's a great question.
Now if you do them independently, right? If you're resolving each one independently, I think you would have to choose after each one resolved if you resolve Sabine. So if he rolls on the first one and you want to use it on the first one, you would have to use it then. You couldn't wait for the other two.
Yeah, I think that's right. That sounds right to me if we're going off of the way that they're describing this now.
Yeah, okay. I mean, it's fine. Just some weird print wording.
I completely checked out for like 10 minutes. That all sounded like a foreign language to me, that's why
we were rules lawyering over here.
Yeah, that's why I'm not a TO, and that's why I just...
He just wins. He just plays the game. He wins. He doesn't know what he's doing. He just rolls dice.
I just roll dice. But I do have a question as far as rules. One of the changes that I don't quite get why it was an FAQ errata or change is the slam timing. Does that change anything in reality, or is it just meaningless?
Yeah, you also have to remember they put these things in also. I mean, they plan two waves ahead. So they put these things in for future reference as well. If it's not something that's obvious right now, it might be later.
So the slam timing, as far as the way K-Wings have been being played, it's no change.
I think it's just simply a clarification, because there's always been a lot of questions about the slam timing and when to drop bombs and that kind of a thing.
Okay.
I think what it does do is so it says here, right, if an effect triggers after performing an action or after executing a maneuver, that if they're happening at the same time, you can choose the order in which they happen. I think it's clarifying, hey, you do have the flexibility there to choose what you're going to do. I can't think of an example right now, but it just gives us a very clear spot in the timing window. That way you know what works at the same time, what comes before, what comes after.
So the only other one for me personally that is kind of important or possibly important is the clarification on the M9G8 and the snapshot that if you target lock a friendly ship with snapshot, that they can re-roll the snapshot, because it's the M9G8 re-rolling that, not the ship shooting the snapshot. So I thought that was something good, because you're basically giving the ship with snapshot two re-rolls, so double predator. So that I think that's good.
Yeah, I think they're being consistent here on the fact that the word "you" in any card now 100% for sure means that specific ship that the card effect is on. All right, guys, it's getting late. Take your time, read through the FAQ. There's a lot of little tidbits.
I remembered something too.
Oh, okay, go for it.
This is totally random, but so when the timing chart came out, I don't know if I ever brought this up when the timing chart actually came out, but when the timing chart came out, it actually made R3A2 unusable. Because R3A2 triggered before a step actually happened. So if you actually went through the flowchart, R3A2 never actually triggered within a legal step. Okay. So that's why they put that in, that he triggers at the end of the declare target step. Because before, he triggered when there was no target, so he actually didn't give out stress.
I thought that was weird too, and I thought that was just a mistake, so I didn't I didn't ever really bring that up.
Rules is written, bro. Yeah, sorry.
I guarantee there's somebody somewhere at a tournament that's played against R3A2 and went, nope, with the flowchart, you can't do that. I guarantee there's at least one person.
I guarantee, and then I'm sure the TO is like, well, then, but that can't be right, because that's probably what I would have had to say. That just they did clear up another really important thing. They cleared up what happens when you reveal an illegal maneuver. You know, there was the whole, like, people were revealing an illegal maneuver with the U-Wing and trying to get a benefit off of doing that. Well, they clarified revealing a red maneuver and going too straight. Basically, if you have stress and you reveal a red maneuver, you will go too straight and you will trigger no abilities. So you can't flip your pivot wing or whatever.
That's a good clarification. It was fun while it lasted.
we didn't allow it at regionals because in the rules as written, it said instead of revealing a red maneuver, you would treat it as if you revealed a 2-white forward. So we didn't let it work at regionals. So it was another thing we got right.
Yeah, getting things right.
Yep. Fel's Wrath is still garbage.
Forever.
Yeah, just be glad. Like, what if your favorite ship was Fel's Wrath instead of Mandarim?
Yeah, that's just waiting. True.
Just waiting for that day. There's some red text under Fel's Wrath. Just
one day. you know, some other kind of highlights here. There's some clarifications with Rage.
Ooh, yeah.
Right. So. Yeah, and I think that's pretty cool how the stress are assigned one at a time, so you get 2 focus tokens off of that. If you're
you get 3, because you get the 1 from raging, and then you get the 2 from the 2 stress. Why Soontir need 3 focus? That would be weird, but yeah, because that's a thing.
He's a greedy monster. That's why. I think one interesting one, more casual thing here, is if you set Han on a rock, to the Heroes of the Resistance Han on a rock, he immediately suffers the effects. If you start him on a rock, so you can't.
Yeah,
be,
that makes sense because, you know, rules as written before, you technically didn't do a maneuver over it, so you could place yourself with the nubs hanging off and be fine. But yeah, not that anyone ever has played Heroes of the Resistance Han.
There's one guy who right now in his car who went, I do. You know there is. We love you, guy, wherever you are. Send us a message when you hear this. And I think one other just kind of clarification that happened here that I want to cover is when you pass a blue target lock token to another ship that has one already, it is for sure 100% that the new blue target lock takes over any old ones, and the old blue ones are discarded unless you have some way to have more than one.
Do you live in the Chicagoland area or plan on visiting? Come on down to Pastimes Comics and Games, the home of Gold Squadron, where we play X-Wing every Wednesday night, as well as have tournaments the first Sunday of every month. We also play Armada, Imperial Assault, and Destiny on different days. Visit our Facebook page and look up Pastimes Star Wars for more information.
Where are those transmissions you intercepted? What have you done with those plans?
Hey everybody, this is Ron Goldleader. As far as events go, this is the segment where we talk about my favorite thing. And we've got 2 major events coming up. We got the Hoth Open the last weekend of March. This is going to be at Adepticon. Going to be the first major tournament I can think of where we'll be using the new rules. So I'm pretty excited for it. If you haven't registered, I would hurry up and register. I'm not even sure if registration's still going. Does anyone know if registration is still available?
So I had to do this because I totally, you know, blanked on the registration date. So online registration is over, but you can register on site.
Oh, you can register on site. Okay.
Yeah, and last I checked, there were a lot of spaces, both more on Thursday and less on Friday, but there are still a lot of spaces.
Okay. And then lastly, we've got Worlds, May the 4th weekend, 5 days of Star Wars. Pretty excited to see what's going to happen there. I will not be playing in either event, but I will be judging, so look for me. Say hi to a Gold Squadron member. I'll have some swag with me for the podcast, I'm sure. And then the other thing is make sure you don't forget to register for Worlds. Registration opens this Sunday. It's Tuesday, right?
Yeah, the 14th.
The 14th, March 14th, Tuesday. So
the day after we release this, probably.
Yep.
I'll be honest with you, if you're not at your computer clicking the button ready to buy your ticket, you probably won't get one.
Yeah.
So you heard
you'll have to be, there's an episode of Big Bang Theory that was on rerun recently on TBS where they were trying to buy tickets for San Diego Comic-Con. It was like the countdown, and then they all just like refresh, 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 refresh. That's what you have to do.
So get that done. I will be playing. I have my ticket already because I was one of the people who got screwed last year, and they said, hey, we'll give you a ticket. So I'm all set there, so definitely playing. So thank you very much for listening to episode 23. We did, like I said, we did have a playbook segment planned, and I know we got a really positive response from the community from that. We're definitely going to continue that, and as long as nothing else kind of crazy happens before now and the next time we record, we will be talking about it. If you ever have any questions, you can feel free to send us an email at goldsquadronpodcast@gmail.com. If you live in the local Chicagoland area, please feel free to join our Facebook group. Just look up Pastime Star Wars on Facebook. If you want to be awesome and like our Facebook page, look up Gold Squadron Podcast. We are on YouTube. Look up Gold Squadron Podcast, and we're on Twitch. If you want to support the podcast financially and get some awesome swag, I did get some finished art today for, I guess I'll just reveal it here, for Backdraft and Nora Wexley. They look awesome. I'll be posting those up here in a little bit. If you want to, you know, get some of that swag, we are giving away swag from the $1, $2, and $3 level. Target Locks and Y-Wings are going to be shipping here in the next couple days. They go to patreon.com, look up Gold Squadron Podcast. For Ron, Andrea, Marcel, and Alex, Gold Squadron out.